You're listening to the Reinvest Podcast, where each Tuesday we will show you how to reclaim, reconnect, and refocus your life by bringing you the top real estate professionals in the industry. We'll pull back the curtain so you can implement these tools and tactics to build generational wealth. Your hosts, Garrett Gatton and Seth Simonillo. Well, not that it matters to you, but it's a Friday recording this episode number 35 for the Reinvest Podcast, where Seth and I get to show you how to maximize your life through the power of real estate investing.
I would like to think that our guests do care that it's a Friday. They're like, wow, that makes me understand this podcast so much more.
Right. You get a little peek into our lives here before we go home to the craziness of our families. And, you know, that's the fun thing about investing is everybody has a why. And we were talking about that earlier today. Everybody's why is a little bit different, but you need to know it.
And that runs perfectly into what I wanted to share. So I was just listening to a podcast. John Gordon was on Brandon Turner's podcast, and he said, we don't get burned out because of what we do. We get burned out because we forget why we do it.
Oh, wow.
And that kind of hit me. I was like, huh. So there's some things that are very mindset oriented, and some people need that push. Yeah. And some people are more maybe self-motivated than that.
But when you have clarity about what you're doing and why you're doing it, it is much easier to wade through the challenges that ensue. There have been a lot of things where I didn't find purpose in it, and then it sucked. And then you're like, wow, I really don't have any motivation to, like, you know, and it takes your energy so much.
Or it's just the wrong purpose or something. You feel like you're grabbing onto something wrong. But anyway, rabbit trails. So today we are going to have a great episode. We have Stan with Trifecta Capital Group. Stan, how you doing?
Hey guys, I'm doing really well. It's, you know, it's end of the week. This is a highlight of my week as we get into the weekend. Doing well, Seth and Garrett.
Man. Awesome. Yeah, thanks. So we met Stan. He was in my mastermind group for the Best Ever Conference 2023. And then we got a chance to kind of catch up with him at the conference, you know, just a while back. And so, yeah, it's been great to get to know you, Stan. We're excited to jump into your story and what you're doing.
A lot of people, you know, one of the things we wanted to focus on today with you, Stan, and your story is we've got a lot of investors, not just in our area, but it's a pretty commonplace thing to start in single family, right? If you were a bigger pockets byproduct, then you probably started in single family. It's low hanging fruit. But making the jump to multifamily can be intimidating. And how do you do that? How do you scale that? So I'm excited to jump into your story today and hear how you did that. But
so why don't you go ahead and tell us about, first of all, Trifecta Capital. Where'd the name originate from?
Really, really good question. So, you know, Trifecta was started in 2018. There's three of us actually, right? And initially the goal, the purpose, mission of Trifecta was, you know, with three individuals, like-minded individuals. And, you know, we are so into, you know, just building, always looking for opportunities to build passive income, right? Mm-hmm. Building that side hustle, because we know that relying on W-2, it's old story, right? And nowadays, you just got to have a backup plan. So as a result of that, the three of us, two close friends of mine, you know, one night we're just hanging out, and we got together, and then we started talking about investing. I mean, each one of us brought in a good number of investing experience in various aspects, right? For me specifically in single family rental, and then the other two partners brought in experience from the commercial side as a passive investor. So we're like, hey guys, you know, why don't we get together? Let's form a company where we can utilize that as a vehicle to start dabbling in investing in commercial, single family, mobile home, things like that passively.
So you guys are the Trifecta. I mean, it's the three of you. So that's cool.
That's right.
That's very, very cool. So why don't you go ahead and give our guests the background into Stan. Why did you get involved in real estate? When did you get involved and kind of the background maybe leading, you know, talking about your single family investments?
Yeah, sure. So I got involved in, I started dabbling in real estate. I would say it was back in 2009, right? Just a little bit backstory of me and my career. I started my career in technology as software engineer, worked my way up to leadership roles and work in various industries, including spending some time in Silicon Valley in a tech startup. And you know how that goes. When you join a startup, you work long hours, right? And they kind of hook you in with all these perks that they give you at the office because they want to make you stay longer at the office and produce more output. And it got to the point where I was like, man, I'm working so many hours here, long hours. I'm getting tired of this, right? There's got to be something else that I can subsidize my income, mainly passively, aside from just playing in the stock market, which I was never good at to begin with, right? Long story short, I started talking to this live mentor of mine, which is a really good close family friend. He's about 15 years older than me. And I remember him, you know, he's known for having a portfolio of rental properties across Hawaii and California. So I reached out to him. I'm like, hey, what is this that you're doing with this rental properties? Can you show me how you got started? And it kind of just took off from there, right? I told him, look, I want to learn from you more from this aspect and just pick your brain and hope that you can provide some guidance. So he kind of showed me the blueprint. And from then, I purchased my first single family home here in Orange County in Southern California with an FHA loan. So that was nice. That was pretty cool. It was actually for me to live in, but I ended up converting that into a rental property. So from there, I kind of just slowly scaling by doing cash out refis and start buying up all, you know, a handful more properties here in Southern California, and to the point where I expanded into parts of Texas as well. That's where I scaled my single family home. So that's really how I started. And you know, from one single family home in 2009, I was able to scale to have a dozen. So in the beginning, I self-managed a couple of the properties here that are local to me. But, you know, it became to a point where, well, now I have a second job, right? Managing tenants and their complaints and scheduling repairs to come in, things like that. So I ended up hiring a property manager for that, as well as for my properties in out of state in Texas. So that's really the background, how I got started in it.
So you started by just getting low down payment, FHA loans, moving into a house, rinse and repeat. And this was 2009. So was this kind of like on the back end of when things had corrected? So you're probably getting into properties on you know, pennies on the dollar.
Right. Absolutely. That was towards the back end of, you know, the whole real estate and mortgage crash, right? Yeah. In 2008. So I was getting my properties really, really good deal. And speaking of that, to be honest with you, three of the properties that I bought, they were actually foreclosed property, distressed properties, because we're towards the back end of that. So I was able to, you know, score that in a good deal.
Well, what's wild about a lot of those properties that got foreclosed upon, you know, when we think foreclosure now, you think like a dump of a property, but there were houses that were like move-in ready foreclosures that people could buy, replace carpet, and live in for the price of a foreclosure. You know, really interesting. I didn't understand all the dynamics at play, still don't, but I know more now than I did about the housing crash and what was going on. There's a local investor that at the time was buying, they call them tapes. Okay, so tapes were large portfolios of foreclosure houses, but instead of going to an auction or whatever site it was and buying one, two, three, you know, the bigger guys were buying tapes, maybe 200 properties that were all foreclosures in process in 2009, 2010. And that was his company. He raised capital to buy these tapes, and then they would reposition and sell off these properties. And the part of the reason that things were sold at such a steep discount is because of the mortgage insurance that was on these houses. You know, the banks got their money back. Like The banks got a portion, a significant portion, and sometimes they made money by a house going through foreclosure by the time they sold it for whatever it was liquidated for, and then recouped money from the mortgage insurance companies. So then that's what gave meat on the bone for investors like yourself to come in and pick those up at a discount. But can you share with us some numbers? I mean, you're in some high growth markets, especially 09. I mean, what were some of those first few houses that you bought them for? And then when you sold, what was the appreciation that had taken place?
Oh, yeah. I'll give you one property that I purchased in 2010. I purchased, it was a single family home, three bedroom, two bath, 1,200 square foot home. It was slightly remodeled. It was move-in ready. It was a foreclosed home, but it was the previous owner had remodeled that, so it was in good condition to move in. It was sitting on a 6,000 square foot lot.
Wow.
It's a corner house. I paid $385 for that, and I ended up selling it for $675 or even $680. I ended up selling that for $680 in 2017, to be exact.
And you had rented out that entire time, like from the time that you'd moved out. So how
was that?
How many years of rental income did you get off of it before you sold it?
Oh, at least 4 years. Wow. About 4 years of rental income.
That's crazy.
Right.
Do you own any of the houses that you originally, like any of the single families that you originally bought back in 2009 and 10? Or did you already sell all those off?
Oh, no, I still have them. I sold two of them, actually, but I still have more than half the portfolio still.
Awesome. What's beautiful about equity like that, it's really money in the bank. I mean, because I don't know what the scenarios were that, you know, necessitated you to sell those, but let's just say you've got a couple multifamily properties that you want to scale into and you need some money. You go to those puppies and you sell them and liquidate
or refinance money out of them. And you have some, that's very cool.
What were some of those pain points early on that you started to feel in the single family realm that caused you to look more towards multifamily?
You know, it's just because it's a little bit different, right? Single family, when you run into issues, tenant issues, vacancy issues, right, or repairs and things like that, it really does put a huge impact on your cash flow, your monthly cash flow, right? A tenant move out and you're pretty much out of pocket during that time, right? During that vacancy for a month, 2 months, you have to cover mortgage out of pocket, right? And in addition to that, California being a pro tenant state, it was very difficult to manage tenant out, so to speak, right? You know that you got to do your own due diligence in the beginning, do screening to let someone into your house and rent your house, right? But things, their circumstances change as well, right? Job situation change. And at that point, they started being late on the payments, on rents and things like that. And you come to a position where, okay, well, you know, we got to work together here. And when can you catch up on rent and things like that? But at the same time, they're also more protected than us, the landlord, in such a way that they're beyond the 90-day late rent. You can't really do anything about that.
Wow.
You know, to go through the eviction process is very tedious and complicated. You got to go through a small claim court and you got to wait, see a judge, and judge have to assign a sheriff to get the tenant out. You can't physically kick them out of yourself. Can't change locks. You can't shut off utilities or anything like that because that's illegal. You just cannot do that, right? Mm-hmm. And not that you want to do that, but the fact that they're very protected than the landlord here, it just makes it that much more difficult to own single family homes here.
So some of it was the fact that you own single families, and then kind of doubly compounded that you own them in California, where it was the landlord tenant laws were in favor of the tenant.
That's right.
So then what was one of those first multifamily deals that you got into?
Yeah, so I got into a multifamily deal as a limited partner. I had no idea what multifamily investing was until a good friend of mine introduced that to me. Reason being because, number one, I was always complaining to him like, oh, you know, have another bad tenant here that I got to deal with. I got another repairs that I got to deal with. And not only
probably,
that,
he was probably sick and tired of hearing you say that. He's like, all right, exactly. we're getting you out of this. We're doing something exactly. else. We're doing multifamily.
Right. Then he was like, hey, have you heard of syndication? I was like, what is that? Multifamily syndication where you can invest passively, right? Not really do anything. And it comes with great benefits. And it sounds like it's going to solve a lot of majority of your headaches here. So I started looking into that. And my first deal multifamily was a 240 unit Class B property in Huntsville, Alabama. Invested in that. Had no idea. Did my due diligence on the operator, on the deal itself, right? I knew what I knew. And I was I'm going to take a chance on this. What's that? Late 2019.
Okay.
Right.
And you guys are still in that property, or did you guys take it full cycle in the last couple of years?
Still in that property. It's actually 6 year hold. That's the term of the deal.
Awesome. So once you got into that first deal and then started to do some subsequent commercial multifamily or just commercial residential, what were the differences that you had seen between the two? You know, I know you've talked about some of the single family side, but what were some things that maybe you didn't anticipate? Like, wow, this is very different.
Yeah, it's just the economies of scale, right? You're looking at now, number one, you know, if you own a 100 unit multifamily property versus a single family home, yeah, a couple of tenants late on their rent, not paying rent, and you're still, your bottom line is still okay, right? It's not hugely impacted. And then secondly, the biggest difference is just the amount of work managing 100 unit versus a portfolio of single family home. It's pretty much the same, but less headache. And secondly, you could heavily rely on your property manager, your asset manager to do a lot of the work for you. To do the tenant acquisition, tenant management, and you can rely on your construction folks to do the renovations, the value add. And so, yeah, just from that perspective, it just makes things a lot more, makes more sense. And from the financial aspect, obviously, just number one comes to mind just from the tax benefit standpoint, right? I think multifamily tax benefits a lot more attractive than it is from single family home, just from the depreciation and accelerated depreciation, cost segregation, and things like that, what you can write off and what you can take in to minimize your tax liability from that standpoint. And overall, just the value of your property is not driven by your neighbors.
That's huge.
Right?
Yeah,
that's huge. It's driven by the income that you get from rents, from your tenant.
Yep. Yeah. We've been Seth and I being full-time real estate agents, believe me, we understand a low appraisal. Like, there is nothing worse than getting, you know, having a property under contract and then the appraisal dictating the value on it, you know, and in the multifamily space, it's very much more dictated by your ability to manage, operate, and maximize the inefficiencies in the property. And one of the aha moments for me, I think, for that is because of the scale, it allows there to be margin to pay other people to do the work where you don't feel that margin on a single family house or a couple of them, you know. So like, even when I underwrite properties, typically it's underwritten from the perspective that there might be an on-site property manager depending on the size of the building. Well, who's going to have that for a single family portfolio? Right. A property management company is going to do that. And so we have guys here locally, kind of in the Midwest, where it's the reason they like single family portfolios is because it's liquid, right? Like, I can peel off a house and sell it retail and, you know, kind of piecemeal it out and get out of it without having to have a big buyer come along and buy my whole portfolio. But the flip side of it is, from a buy and hold standpoint, multifamily is so much better for that. So give us some really some concrete things about how somebody who's currently invested in single family can make that pivot into multifamily. Like, what were the things that you were scared of by multifamily that you kind of had to acknowledge and say, you know, this intimidates me, but we're just going to take it head on? And how did you navigate some of those challenges?
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing is just the scale, the thought of buying an apartment complex, right? It really never crossed my mind. I thought only millionaires, people with tons of money can right. get into that type of property and really purchase something like that, right? But I was wrong. And really the turning point for me is just being able to think in a bigger scale, right? I mean, for you to scale single family home, you need a lot of upfront capital to begin with to be able to scale. And if your goal really to replace the income, the rental income from your 9-to-5, you're going to, I don't know how much you make, you know, how much everybody makes, but at the minimum, you're going to need at least 10, 15, or even 20 single family properties to be able to replace that, right? Your living expenses. But with multifamily, it's just you playing at a bigger scale. Yes, you're taking on bigger risk, but at the same time, it's big rewards as well, right? And one way for me to just went, my wife and I decided to go all in on multifamily because we just see so much upside potential by being in the multifamily space than it is in single family home.
To that point, you said it's greater risk but greater reward. We had a previous guest, Seth Teagle, who had said that if you want to make thousands, you know, play with thousands, but if you want to make millions, play with millions. And we were like, that's of a big statement.
did you have somebody that, you know, it sounded like the first multifamily you were co-GP, okay? So there was the other general partner was the operational portions of that acquisition. Is that right?
That's right. And that's the lead sponsor.
They probably gave you a measure of confidence to invest with them and get your feet wet. The lift wasn't on you. It was on them. I know you had responsibilities. I'm not diminishing that, but it's different than being the lead sponsor where you have to execute the pro forma. You're doing the CapEx budget. You're, you know, negotiating with the lender and you're doing that because there's a lot of nuances there and get having somebody to hold your hand for that first deal that is truly a commercial deal. Me, it goes so far. And I think sometimes because we are aggressive, we want to grow, we want to scale, we almost get a little, our eyes get bigger than our stomach, mm-hmm. and we're like, I want to take this on myself because I want to take the whole pie. And it's like, it would be more prudent for you to take a piece of the pie, share that with somebody else, get experienced in it, and then grow into where your capacity is. Okay, I can take this on by myself or with fewer partners or have more of an active role. Do you feel more confident now in going forward to be a lead sponsor from having kind of gone through a couple reps already, watching someone else do the lift?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, going into this, you kind of just have to be realistic with yourself, right? As much as you want to be the lead sponsor, but you just got to take a step back. You're responsible for people's money, investors' money. Not only that, you're signing on the loan, right? If it's recourse loan, you know, you got to perform, right? At the end of the day, you just have to perform. You have full responsibility to deliver to not only to your investors, but also, you know, the commitments across all of your business partners as well, right? And we look at this, I look at this going into this as a team sport, right? Doing something like this is a team sport. Everybody, absolutely. You got to work with folks, with people that bring in their own expertise into this. You partner with them, you bring in your own strengths into this. And that's really what makes it successful, right? If you want to take down a deal, then you bring in someone who is more experienced that have done proven track record as a lead sponsor and bring that in. And obviously from a split perspective, yeah, they may get a bigger split, but at the same time, they will pave the way and you take that opportunity for yourself to learn that, right? I think just learning it, you can't really put, you know, it's more valuable it is than trying to take down a deal by yourself, knowing that you'll get a bigger yeah. reward at the end. But yeah, it's fast forward at this point, I do, and Trifecta, I do feel more comfortable now leading more into at the main sponsor on the future deals.
Do you remember what Lee, his first deal, remember that guy that was kind of his mentor?
Mm, right.
He had somehow compensated him for being, I don't know if he was the KP on it or something.
Yeah. He gave him a piece of the deal just to help him through it.
Yeah, just to help him through it. Made him an equity partner in the deal just to have kind of that presence and that consultation to go through. The guy didn't do very much other than that he was present, and Lee gave him a considerable portion of the deal, probably disproportionate than what was quote-unquote fair, but he recognized, you know, this guy had invested a lot in him mm-hmm. and yep. had showed him the ropes, and this was a way to kind of honor that relationship and also have, you know, some presence where he's not on an island, which I thought was super cool.
Yeah.
And yeah. above board on it.
And even for those out there that are in single family or maybe some small multis that are like, the jump to a bigger multifamily, maybe like what you were talking about, Stan, just seems so intimidating. It's like, how do you even do it by yourself? I don't have millions of dollars. You know, that's when you can reach out to someone
yeah.
and get educated. Yep. And whether that's as a limited partner or co-GP or whatever that would be, there are tons of resources out there that you can find out how to invest in large multifamilies. And, you know, get those great returns and get the upside and the tax benefits and all that stuff.
There was, this is always a helpful breakdown for somebody who's trying to kind of build a mental structure of what a partnership consists of. So, you know, you've got somebody who's going to put the effort in, the sweat equity, they're going to be the operations part of the investment. You've got the money, got to have money. And then you're going to have the experience, right? So, If you're out there listening and you're trying to figure out where do you fit into that, I remember coming into this and being like, okay, I've got the drive and the hustle, and I had some people that were mentors, but I don't have the money, and I would minimize the hustle and what that brought to a deal. But there's a lot of people out there that are looking for somebody else to do the lift and put the legwork in. And they actually are excited to come alongside of somebody who is younger and has some energy and some drive and essentially bet on you by being the money behind a specific venture. So don't minimize that. You know, you just need to find the right partner, somebody that would want to come alongside of you and believe in you that way. But you need those three key ingredients in a deal.
So. Absolutely. We are going to move on to our smaller pockets segment. So Stan, it's time to rip off the Band-Aid. Go ahead and tell us your worst real estate deal. What happened? What was the outcome? And then most importantly, what did you learn from it to bring some value to our guests so they do not have to fall in your, they don't have to fall in your footsteps in that way.
Yeah. I think this is, I'm going to, you know, pivot away from multifamily, but I have a couple of stories here. But I think the one that really resonated so much with me for this question is really my experience of investing in a rehab, distressed property and doing a rehab deals, right? I went in as a capital partner with someone else who was actually doing the work involved in the day-to-day operations and the renovation of portfolio of single-family homes, rehabs. So we ran into so much problems from the get-go. I think one of the things that we ran into was, number one, just, you know, delays after delays on getting permits from the city based on the renovation, the expansions that we wanted to do as part of the plan. And then secondly, you know, we've had a couple of incidents where our contractors just pretty much ghosted us, stopped working on the job and no show. Ugh. And after, right. And then they kind of just took off with what we had paid them for, nowhere to be found. And not only that, we ran into a situation where it was really hard for us to find another contractor to fill in, to backfill that and take on, continue the work. So we had that issue I would say maybe 2-3 times during the period of this rehab project across 3 properties, actually, here in Southern California. And this was a couple years ago. So, yeah. And then not only that, it got to the point where it kind of the relationship between myself and the other partners kind of getting strained because of that. Right. There was no formal communication anymore between the two of us, and me being the passive investor capital partner, I would expect that, hey, keep me posted. But it got to the point where I had to do my own follow-up constantly, find out where we stand, because, hey, there's holding costs associated with this that we baked into our pro forma. But now we're coming towards the end of it, right? And we keep spending money and over budget overruns, and property tax are coming due, and we're still not done yet. You know, we have projected 8 or 9 months to complete. We're like almost at the 11 month now and almost the 1 year mark. So what do we do? So I think the bottom line is, a lot to learn from that experience.
How long, you said you projected 8 months for the project. How long did it actually end up taking? Did you finish it, or did you guys walk away from it?
No, we finished it, but it took about 15 months.
So, okay. So, and then how much over budget were you by the end of that?
Oh man, it was about 30 to 35% over budget.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Did you have to infuse it with more capital?
We had to. Yeah. Our own personal money. Into that, because we had to keep the project. We had to complete the project. There was no way around that, right?
Are you friends with that guy today?
Complete the project, put it on market. And it was a nightmare.
So did you do okay? Was the strategy to buy these, rehab them and sell them, or were you going to rent them?
No, that was a strategy to rehab and sell them.
So did you sell them all? And did
we ended up selling them, but obviously, you know, we had to take a hit on the back end from just the holding costs and the delays and the increase in labor costs, material costs.
Did you at least make a little bit still at the end of that, after the end of 15 months, or did you lose money?
No, it was actually broke even. It was, it broke even. So we lost time, obviously. Right. And, yeah.
Wow.
You look at that, and you're like, when you break even on something, which, I mean, it could have been worse. So, I mean, there's that. But when you're like 15 months of all of that, you know,
exactly.
And I'm not rubbing your face in the dirt at all. I'm actually thinking of a property that I own right now that is a real scenario for me. In a very similar story, probably on a smaller scale. But what did you learn from that with the guy that you were partnered with the strategy as a whole?
Yeah, I think, you know, from a strategy standpoint, going forward, not that I would do anything like this again in the near future, right? but I think what I could have done, what we could have done better, is really to add the buffer reserves, right? Mm. To accommodate something like this. I mean, to have a contractor walk out on a job, and that really, you know, we had to absorb a lot of the cost and time because of that. And just finding a replacement, starting all over again, and really, you know, and having them to continue the work and dealing with the delays from the city getting permits, and check this out. As in the middle of all of that, the new contractor who we onboarded started doing their work, and they cut into a drywall and accidentally cut into a pipe.
Wow!
And that itself, we had a water burst because of that. We had to go back and clean it up, and yeah, and we had just put in a new floor, and it was terrible. So we had to redo a couple of things twice because of that. So yeah, long story short, moral of the story is that put a good amount of reserves into that, and really work with someone that have done it, have proven it, who's someone that you can depend on, right?
Yeah, maybe someone that's done it before, because it sounds like maybe your partner wasn't super savvy maybe with communicating with contractor, or managing contractors should be a better word. And then the permits, I bet the permit thing was probably pretty annoying too. That's probably anybody wanting to work in an area like that, it would probably be prudent to find out what permits you need first and get a jump start on those.
Yeah.
Because that could definitely hold up a project.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
All right, Stan, we're going to go into what we call our little nugget. So we are looking for you to give one practical takeaway piece of advice, maybe a hack for our listeners that they can apply to their real estate investing businesses.
Yeah, sure. Number one, invest in yourself, right? Don't be afraid to invest in yourself. What that means is, you know, get a mentor, get a coach, and enroll in a coaching program, right? Invest that because, you know, it will accelerate you. It will fast track your journey that much faster than you trying to learn it yourself without having someone more experienced guiding you through that process. Invest in yourself, get a coach, that's the number one thing, get a mentor, and really just do it. Don't get into the cycle of overanalyzing to the point where you don't end up doing it, because now you start making up things in your head why you shouldn't do it, and just ignore all of that. Just do it.
Just do it. I've heard that quote.
Learn yeah. by mistake.
No, that's great.
I had this epiphany moment at one of the conferences where I was looking around the room and I was like, you know what? There is nothing different between the people in this room and myself. And, you know, you get around people and we're just typically, if you're doing something like this, like real estate investing, you have some measure of confidence, even if you're faking it.
Yeah. And so I have more confidence if you are faking it.
right. Yeah. Too much confidence. And, you know, you begin to kind of compare yourself to other people. And you realize everybody's got the same struggles. Everybody yeah. has the same insecurities. Everybody's got the same doubts about, you know, whether they can make a deal work or if they can raise a certain amount of money or if they have the relational networking capacity to really go to the next level in their business or if they have the leadership abilities to go there. I mean, it's just like we all have the same, we're in the same spot that way. It almost levels the playing field, I think, when you think about just the community of investment and mm-hmm. collaborating with each other, not being afraid to say things in front of people who know more than you and maybe look like an idiot or say something dumb. Like we laugh so hard. I'll tell a story. I've never said this on the podcast, which is dangerous. Joe, if you're out there, the first year we went to the Best Ever conference, Seth and I were sitting down eating lunch and Joe Fairless came and sat at our table and everybody's like, oh my gosh, Joe Ferris is here.
You know, everyone starts peppering him with questions, which I'm sure he's used to. So,
and he was super gracious to answer our questions. But I'm thinking, like, what's a question that I could ask Joe freaking Fairless, you know? And like, I've got this golden moment. And so I'm like, hey, Joe, riddle me this. I was like, you've got a background in marketing. So explain to me, like, does that where your strategy comes from to rebrand all the properties that you buy through Ashcroft? You know, I'm thinking, hey, marketing background, rebranding, great idea. And literally it was the dumbest question because he's like, what are you talking about? Like rebranding. He's like, we do that on every property. Like it was such a normal thing.
It was such a low level principle that he was he had a hard time understanding what we were asking. And after we laughed about it. We laughed about it. We're like, oh, we blew our shot, our question. But we in the Midwest in Class C and B properties, no one. Would properties change hands around here? People are not rebranding them typically.
Yeah. It's there's no makeover. There's not like new signage outside. Come up with a sexy name for the property.
So we were seeing what he was doing. We're like, oh, it's a good idea.
And this is when I was new to syndication and stuff. But like, you know, I look like a fool, but we have come so far because we've just been consuming and learning and networking and growing. And I think, don't be afraid to do that.
And it keeps us humble.
It does keep you humble.
It keeps you humble. So, and even so, to Stan's point, his little nugget, invest in yourself, get a coach, get a mentor, get a mastermind group, whatever that'd be. There are so many different resources out there and different groups. If multifamily is your thing, there's a lot of people that do that. Mobile home parks, single family rentals, short-term rentals. I mean, there's literally resources for every single one of those strategies. And if you guys need help getting plugged into something, I mean, reach out to us and we probably have some things we could recommend to you guys and some people that we could point you towards to help you get started in whatever you're trying to invest
in. Yeah, I got a great podcast for you. All right, hey, two more questions as we kind of land the plane here for you. What's been one of the greatest resources in your real estate investing career?
I think it has a lot to do. Well, first and foremost, it's definitely my wife, right? She's been very supportive of this to begin with.
I'll make sure she listens to this podcast.
Yeah, she's been very supportive of this for me just to go all in. And number two, just going back to resources, you know, there's tons of free resources out there, right? Podcasts like you guys' podcast. You know, use YouTube as a resource and tons of resource on Spotify as well, and go to networking event. But for me, mainly just having access to a mentor, a coach, that's number one thing that have accelerated me to this point, really. And then just putting yourself out there, attend those networking events, those meetups. But when you go to these meetups, be very intentional, right? Mm. With what you want to do, what you like to accomplish. But at the same time, you need to come in from a place of providing value, mm-hmm. right? You can't just go in and ask people. You got to go in and provide value, right? And I think, yeah, there's plenty of opportunities and resources and platforms out there for you to just learn and be a sponge and
yeah.
Network with the right people, with the right crowd, surround yourself with the right crowd.
Very good. Very good. Lastly, man, talk about your company, talk about Trifecta. How can people follow your guys' success?
Yeah, absolutely. Trifecta Capital Group. So we have Trifecta One and Trifecta Two. Trifecta One was, founded in 2018, and we still have that, but that's mainly on the passive side, passive investing side. Trifecta Two is really, we pivoted that into more active syndicator route. So you can find us on Trifecta Capital Group LLC.com, and you'll find our information there, our email, our contact. Feel free to reach out to us. And, we look for value at properties, specifically in Arizona and Texas marketplace. And our goal and mission is really to help busy professionals, working professionals, to be able to invest passively, without really lifting a finger and doing any of the heavy lifting. And a lot of it is driven from our own experience and background, wanting to create passive incomes to not rely on W-2, right? And that's really where we are now, and that's what we do.
I think what's powerful about that for you guys is you're trying to now offer a service that you wanted at the time that you were really heavy in that, So
that's right.
You kind of understand that lifestyle, that mindset of corporate America and the grind that can be, and how to, set up alternate income streams. So, that's awesome. We'll put that stuff in the show notes, man. And, dude, thank you so much for coming on today and taking some time to join our guests and come on the podcast.
All right. Thank you guys. Thank you for having me.
Awesome, man. As always, excited that you joined us on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast. If this episode added to your tool belt or left you feeling inspired, go ahead and share it with a friend. Stay tuned every Tuesday for new episodes. And if you want to get in touch with us, go to our LinkedIn or Facebook profiles and shoot us a message. Move farther, reach higher, and grow deeper. See you next time.